Got some bad news, got some good news. Bad news, somebody owns a white or light blue Vega with a Tennessee license, 1H6774. Guess what you left on? Right. It's got an easy does it sticker. So we think you belong to us. Before I get launched into my regular series of unannouncements, I've got two very important announcements to make tonight. And they consist of this. There's two ladies here tonight that one of them came to the convention 2 years ago and hadn't had a drink since. And one of them came to the convention a year ago and hasn't had a drink since. So they're celebrating their second and their first year birthday tonight. And I'd like to have Jane B. and Joanne H. stand up. Where are you? It's Jane B. Joanne H., right there. Happy birthday, both of you. The voice will get around to kissing you pretty soon. Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night portion, the 8 p.m. portion of the 5th Annual Memphis Bluff City AA Conference. Kitty Lou has laid all these admonishments out here, and we'll go right through them. Now, if you haven't got a badge, get one. Now, that's important. Got to have your badge. Newcomers, that's not a strange noise. That's really a noise. What am I doing? I used to be secretary of a group that PA system had a bleed-in from a FM station, and it would drift in and out. And you could always tell the newcomers when that music would drift in, they said, "Oh, my God." You know? Well, I can't think of anything else to announce, and I have to turn this thing over. But anyway, I want you to join me in welcoming the chairman for the 8 o'clock meeting, a good friend of mine and known all over this town for a lot of work that she does for AA. And join me in welcoming Jan Kay.
Let's open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer, for those who care to join in. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Hi, everybody. My name is Jan King, and I'm an alcoholic. Thrilling to see this many faces here on a Friday night. There's something very joyous to me about hearing this many voices in unison offer the Serenity Prayer. The first convention I attended was the largest crowd that I had ever seen of sober alcoholics all in one room, and it still raises goosebumps on my flesh to hear you all say hello and to say the Serenity Prayer, and it's so nice to see everybody tonight. I would like to open the meeting with a portion from Chapter 2 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do for ourselves. I'm honored to introduce our speaker for the meeting tonight. I just met this lady right before I came up here. She is from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Her name is Holly M., and please join me in welcoming her tonight.
Pour me some of that, too. Oh, thank you. Oh, my God, I didn't know all these people were here. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Holly, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm real pleased to have been invited to be here. I was sitting here in front, you know, See, that shows you ought to look back once in a while and see what's going on behind you back there. But I've had a very enjoyable time from the minute I got off the plane and up until right now. But I think with God's help, everything's going to turn out all right. I am, after thanking you for inviting me, I'm not going to give you a blow-by-blow description of my drinking, because I have noticed over the years, sometimes, you know, we can get carried away with that, and we, instead of glorifying the program, we begin to deify our drinking, and that's not where it is. The big book simply states the fact that our stories reveal in a general way what we used to be like and what happened and what we are like now. I could stand here half the night telling you what I used to be like, but that's naturally we have to identify to let you know that we do belong. But it's a known fact that you're not going to hang around this organization very long if there's not something wrong with you. Because if you do, there will be something wrong with you. It won't take long. When I first came here, I thought that this is the craziest bunch of people I ever saw in my life. And they said, "We want to be your friend." I thought, "You sure in hell are hard up for friendship." Really, something else. But anyway, as the book says, our stories reveal in a general way what happened, what we used to be like, what happened. You know, I always like to start at that happening stage. I like to tell you how I got here in the first place, because to me that was the beginning of a miracle, how I happened to come into the fellowship. There was no one that pressured my coming in, no human being, because I don't know of anybody that gives a damn what happened to me one way or the other. Pardon me, I don't mean to talk like that. That's not nice. Let's see. Well, nobody really cared. Let's put it that way, one way or the other. But, you know, I had people say to me, you know, Holly, don't you think you need some help with your drinking? I said, no, I drink it all by myself. I don't need some help. You sound crazy. Me, I need some help with it. Not unless they're going to bring some over or something like that. But a couple of times the words AA had been mentioned, but not in reference to me. I don't know how the remarks were made one way or the other. But this happened to me, my friends, on a Saturday night, and I don't care how many times that I talk, I have to tell about this because this was a miracle. You know, sometimes it is simply wonderful how one does get the message. It can come to you in some of the strangest ways, and this message came to me, and I shall never forget that it was on a Saturday night. And the miraculous part about it was that I was home on a Saturday night. That was the beginning of a miracle. I guess I had just been fired, I suppose, from the local tavern that I had worked at, because, you know, I used to work in nightclubs, and then, you know, it goes on down, then you begin to work in bars, and then you begin to work in dens, and then you begin to work in dives, and then, you know, work. I was thinking one of those kind of things. It happens something like that. But this particular night, I happened to be sitting home there at my kitchen table, and well, I wasn't exactly alone. I had Sweet Lucy with me. That was my girlfriend. That's the only girl I work for all day long. She whipped me every night. Wine. Now, I'm not standing here telling you that I was a wino. Women are not winos. They're winettes. And so, anyway, this particular Saturday night, there I sat at the kitchen table drinking my wine. Story came on over the radio. It was called The Glass Crutch. Now, I did not turn the radio on to this particular station, for the simple reason is, when you're in my condition, you don't pick out stations and all that kind of stuff. You just buy a radio and you plug it in, and it plays, so it gives out. You hear voices all the time anyway, so what doesn't matter. So this particular night, this story came on. It was about a woman. It was called The Glass Crutch, and it was about a woman that had a drinking problem. Now, had it been about a man that had a drinking problem, well, I wouldn't have paid any attention to that. All the men I knew had some kind of problem. If they knew me, it was a problem, as far as that's concerned. But it was about a woman that had a drinking problem. You know, I'd had remarks made to me about my drinking before, and as I said, and all that sort of thing. But this particular night, as I listened to this story, and I do not today remember any of the ingredients of the story. All I can remember was about a woman that had a drinking problem. And it said, if you ever need our help, we'll be the first number in the book. And the name of the program or the story was called The Glass Crutch. Now, that is about all that I can remember about that. But I do remember saying this to myself. Now, if that woman would just drink some nice, cool, clean wine, she wouldn't have a problem. You know, wine didn't do anything to anybody. That's so I thought. You know, you just got crazy quicker. That was all there was to it, you know. And I do remember that I said to myself, I don't need anything like that sort of thing. She's just drinking that bad whiskey. As if I hadn't drank plenty of that, too. But, you know, that story stuck in my mind. It stuck in my mind. That is another thing that I would like to say to you. The message is never lost. Because, you see, that stayed with me 6 or 7 years prior to my coming into the fellowship. I can remember walking down the street. This did not happen every day or every week or every month, but I can remember walking down the street, and it seemed as if the heel plates on my shoes would beat out the words, The Glass Crutch. I can remember at certain times the clock on the wall did not say tick-tock. It said, The Glass Crutch, The Glass Crutch. You know, if any of you have ever read The Hound of Heaven, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Because we run. And how I ran from this. And as we're told in The Hound of Heaven, when we read it, how he runs right behind us. You know, if he wants, he's going to get you. And that's for sure. Finally, one day, I was sitting home there trying to read the newspaper, and it seemed as if every word on that newspaper said The Glass Crutch. And it dawned on me exactly what that meant. Every word on there, The Glass Crutch. My eyes left that newspaper, and here I was holding a glass in my hand, and it dawned on me right then and there. Holly, you can't even read the newspaper without The Glass Crutch. You know, it would sound real dramatic to say I dropped that glass and ran right to the phone and called that number, but I did no such thing. I thought, now, if there's anything wrong with me, I can fix it. You know, I was a great little fixer there. I can straighten it out, but oh, no. And I can remember when I went to that phone, when I finally did go to that. I looked in the book. I was hoping I was going to make a liar out of him. I said, it ain't in no book, you know. There it was. First thing in the book. So I called, you know, the number there. And I told the lady when she answered the phone, I said, you know, I got a friend out here. And I said, I think she's losing her mind. And the lady said, my tongue was about that thick, and the lady said, would you like to have somebody come and talk to you? I said, oh, no. I don't know whether it was 24 or 48 hours later, I don't remember, that I called back again. And the lady said she would have someone to come out and talk with me. You see, by now, I had reached the stage of zombieism. That is, if you drink, you don't get drunk, and if you don't drink, you don't get sober, you know? A zombie is. They move you over here and you stay over there. That's the stage. She said, well, how long have you been drinking? Well, you know, I started drinking when I was about 14 years old. That's when I had my first drink, when I was about 14. And, you know, that's what tickles me today, you know, when people talk about, now, what are we going to do about the age limit? You know, should it be 18 or 21? You know, if they're going to get drunk, them kids are going to get drunk. Ain't no need to, you sitting around worrying about the age limit going up and down. They didn't worry about the age limit going up and down when I was coming along, because if you want it, you're going to get it, you know, and that sort of thing, which I did. So, naturally, I didn't go in five. Of course, my grandfather had this old bottle of whiskey there. He kept in the desk drawer, in the dresser drawer there. Were a lot of herbs and junk in there, and he'd go in there every once in a while and take 2-3 swigs out of it, you know, for his arthritis or rheumatism or whatever it was, and he'd cripple over there. And he'd get a drink, and he'd rub his leg, and first thing you know, he's able to walk away, you know, all right. I used to see Grandpa do that, and I went over there, you know, and I went switching over there to the drawer, and I got several swigs, and I went crippling away, you know. So from there on in, you know, I took a liking to alcohol and drank for quite a number of years. Now let's go back to this day. Many things, a lot of water went under the bridge in all that length of time, but I'm sure you're not interested in that. You know, that's one thing that always upsets me. If something's wrong with me, I'm sick or something, somebody brings me some medicine, you know, and they keep holding it like this, and you laying there dying, and come on, please give me the medicine. Please, man. But now, my Aunt Clara had the same thing you had, and you reached for the medicine. But let me tell you, Uncle Joe, he died of it. You know, you keep reaching for it. Would you please give me this stuff and let me have it and drink it up and get rid of it and keep telling me about what everybody died of, you know, or something like that. Same with AA. Please tell me, how did you recover? What role did you take to be on the road of recovering, as far as I hate the word recovered alcoholic. I do. I despise the word recover. You know, every time I think of a recovered alcoholic, you know, I can see an undertaker stand out there with a shovel full of dirt, banging it down on somebody. I say, oh, that he's recovered, you know. He's covered and recovered, you know. So that's the reason why I like to stay on the road of recovering, you know, one of those kinds of things. As far as that's concerned, recovered, that's too much like, you know, being reformed, and there's nothing on the earth worse than a reformed drunk. Oh, God. They're pretty miserable people. Well, this, I'm getting back to what I was talking about, you know. This woman, she called me there, and she said to me, now, if you've got anything to drink now, you get rid of it. Well, I did. I drank it up. I got rid of it. But, you know, alcohol, now, I was in the stage of zombieism, really. But alcohol is everything the big book says it is. I love that book, you know. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Just about 45 minutes, maybe, or an hour or something like that, before going to that meeting, that woman coming out to get me. And I told you I was in this stage of zombieism. Two of my lush-head friends came by there, and they gave me a couple of drinks of something. And it was the same as pouring coal oil on the dying embers, you know. Have you ever thought you were sober and you wasn't sober, or you thought you had this alcohol nullified and you poured something on, just take a drink of water, as far as that's concerned, and it lights up like a Christmas tree all over again. Well, the lady came, you know, and one of the things that woman said to me, I shall never forget as long as I live. I had two children. You know, I had, I'd been married, you know, one of those kind of things. A couple of times there. Well, marriage is like vaccinations on me, they don't take. And, first marriage, two children. Second marriage, two ulcers, you know, one of those kind of things like that. But I said to this lady, I said, you know, I got to do something on account of these kids. She says, you do something on account of you, and then your children will benefit by that. All of my sober life, I've remembered that. You do this for you. Other people will benefit. But you must do it for you. And, you know, right away, somebody will jump up and say, oh, what do you mean, must? There's no must in the big book. Well, then you must read it, because there are some in there. You know, there are quite a few in there, you know. I took the privilege of going through there and ringing around everyone I see, you know. And nevertheless, she took me to that first meeting and she drugged me there. I got there. Three other gals jumped up because they thought this was going to be my pallbearers. We'll help you with her. And I was a pretty pitiful mess. I'm not going to lie about that. I really and truly was. And I could not understand for the life of me what in the world these people were talking about. But the next morning when I woke up, these words came to my mind. You know, you never know when... Sometimes you say there's no need to talk to him or her. They're not paying any attention to you anyway. You never know what's being heard. I tell you one thing. You start talking... You can see a person that you think he's drunk and you start talking about cutting off his drinks and see if he don't hear that. You heard what you said. Yeah. You heard it. See, I attended bar for 20 years. I know all about that. Yeah. I attended bar. I believed in on-the-job training. That's why I attended bar. Well, nevertheless, the next morning when I woke up, these words came to my mind. Rarely have we ever seen a person fail. Those words came to my mind just... You mean to tell me God didn't give me this program? Those words came to this befuddled mind. Rarely have we ever seen a person fail. And I went back to my second meeting to find out exactly what those people were drinking that rarely ever failed. I was going back to find that out. And I went back, you know. But it took a little time for things to make sense to me. They didn't make sense to me right away. But there were, here is something that had happened. Now, I didn't like my sponsor. I hated that woman. One of them, I just couldn't stand that woman at all. You know, every time I looked at her, she was dragging out this who me on me, you know. And she had buck teeth, and she'd look at me, and she'd grin, and I didn't know if she was going to bite me or what, you know. And to tell you the truth, I was scared of the woman. I really was, you know what I mean. And, you see, I felt about her like some, you know, men feel about their wives. I wish the hell you'd go away and leave me alone, but don't go so far I can't find you if I need you, you know. Because we're pitiful people, really pitiful people. And I was really pitiful. This woman, she'd pull out this who me on me, you know, and she would keep saying to me, just answer yes to three, dear, and you're in. I thought, old Biddy must be getting 50 cents a yes or something, you know. And you would ask the dumbest questions you ever heard, you know, in your life, you know. Is drinking clouding your reputation? She'd look, now just answer yes to three. Is drinking clouding your reputation? Why, heavens no. You've been in a fog that many years, how do you know whether it's cloudy or not or something like that? And then she'd come on with another. And do you seek a lower environment while drinking? Why, heavens no, I merely created a lower environment while drinking. And then she asked one of the damnedest questions you could ask any practicing alcoholic. Do you prefer to drink alone? Isn't that dumb? If I'm buying it, yes. If you're buying it, no. That's the way I talk about that, you know. Anyway. But, you know, there's something about this thing. You know, it's a strange thing. We can need help so badly. And the minute that we think that you're going to get some help, you know, when you're in a hell of a fix and you think, well, you need help so doggone badly. And then the minute that you call, the first thing you say, now, what in the devil did I do that for? Didn't I have enough misery without calling up them people? Yeah. But these old gals, you know, I really... love the way we did some sponsoring in those days. They really and truly did. And they said, just keep coming. Well, they didn't have to tell you to keep coming. They didn't do that. They didn't do like they do in many meetings now, say, just keep coming. And they didn't call you up and say, are you going to the meeting tonight? They said, well, I'll be over tonight, and you be ready. One of those kind of things. And that was all there was to it. And you're scared to say no because you know all about that loneliness. And you don't want them, and yet you don't want to turn loose of them, you know. Because really, within your heart, you haven't made up your mind that you don't want to turn loose of that bottle. That's what it really and truly is. See, that was a hell of a fight going on there, one way or the other. Sure, I can truthfully say from the bottom of my heart that from the day that I came into this fellowship until the present time, I haven't had a drink, but I'm not going to tell that lie. I have never had a desire to have a drink. Oh, yes, I have. I've had plenty of desire. You know, it's wonderful. Some people get away, but you see, there's a difference between an urge, a desire, and a compulsion. You know, let's don't get them all mixed up with one another, you know. Sometimes, you know, a person will come looking in and say, you know, I was compelled to drink all baloney. You're not, no. See, there can be no compulsion without first consent of the will. And there will be no compulsion until you pick up that first drink either. Now, you might have an urge or you might have a desire. I've had an urge and a desire to slap judges, but I didn't. You know? So, no. And no way in hell have I ever been compelled to hit one. You know? So, you know, many times when we hear people tell us about it, well, you know, I had a terrible urge. I said, yes, I know, that's normal. Most of us do. Well, I had an awful urge, yes. Mm-hmm. I had a temptation, yes. Uh-huh. But compulsion, oh, no, brother. I said, well, what was you drinking before the compulsion hit you? It wasn't coffee. Because you're not compelled, you know. You still got that free will that you pick up that bottle, you know, because I know about that bottle. But as time went on, my dear, something beautiful began to happen to me. You see, I had heard a story, and I like to always compare our lives, my life rather, with this story called The Legend of the Butterfly. It was about a little crippled boy, and oh, how I can identify with this little fellow. This little boy was, I don't know whether he was born crippled or whether he got crippled shortly after birth, but nevertheless, he was in a wheelchair. His father had always had the best, so he thought, therapist for him and everything for him, all to no avail. His father was a very rich merchant who certainly did everything he possibly could do for his youngster. And one day while he was down in Old Mexico, he saw an old Indian chief making some moccasins. And he said, well, I will buy my youngster those moccasins and take them to him. And the old Indian chief, as he began to purchase the moccasins, says there is a beautiful story that goes along with those moccasins. Whosoever wears them, and the father says, wait just a minute, my son will never wear these moccasins out because he is a hopeless cripple in a wheelchair. And the old Indian chief said, let me continue with my story. He said, whoever wears the moccasins, if while wearing the moccasins, they can capture a white butterfly and press the wings of this white butterfly to their infirmity, they will recover. Well, the good merchant took the moccasins home and presented them to his youngster. And just as an afterthought, he told him the legend of the white butterfly. Just as an afterthought. Well, something happened within this child. A beautiful word. Sometimes when you and I hear something that we feel it might help us, we too might have had this same feeling. This child had the feeling of hope. Hope was born within him. So every morning he would get up and get into his wheelchair. Someone would put him there, of course. And he would go down into his father's flower garden to try to capture a white butterfly. But you know, you can't capture a white butterfly in a wheelchair. So he asked his father one day for a pair of braces. And his good father gave him the braces. And this child would go again down to try to capture the butterfly. But these braces were a very heavy thing, very bunglesome, very heavy. And he couldn't capture the butterfly. Finally, he asked his father for a pair crutches. His father gave him the crutches. And he would go each day with the crutches. But how can you capture something when you're holding on to a crutch? So finally, one day, he said to his good father, "Father, give me a cane." His father gave him a cane. And when he went to the flower garden that morning, and the butterfly flew very near to him, he reached out and he captured the butterfly, and the cane fell from under his arm. Now, what had happened? Now, you and I know very well that no white butterfly doesn't cure anything. But what had really happened? What had happened was this. The first thing that happened to him was hope. I can recover. But what else happened? He began to do something that he had never done before. You see, all the times that his good father had had all the therapists and specialists helping him, they had been doing one thing only. They had been massaging his muscles. But you see, he began to exercise his muscles. You see, there's a difference when we massage a thing and we exercise it, you know? You see, when we begin to lie about our drinking, you know, and we begin to cover up, we're massaging it, you know. You know, justify it and all that. You're massaging it, you know. Well, it wasn't that bad, or my stomach was bothering me, or my neighbors was bothering me, or my dog had kittens or cats or dogs or whatever cats have or something like that, you know. And we massage it. Every excuse is a massage. But, you know, when we begin to exercise. Now, what is the first muscle this youngster? See, he had the crowning glory when he had hope. But what is the first muscle that he had to exercise? That was a muscle of honesty, you know? And that's the one I like to identify with that first step. You know, I guess you say, there goes Holly and them steps again. Well, you take out the steps and you ain't got no program, you know? You don't have nothing, you know? Well, you don't, you know? One of those kind of things. You know, and when we admit that we're powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. See, that was the first muscle I had to use, like this youngster. The muscle of honesty. See, this child, like me, had to say, do I honestly want to get well? Do I honestly want to recover? You know, sometimes, have you ever lied, told a lie for so long that you believed it yourself? You know? Yeah. We are great people. Well, excuse me for using that word we all the time, but I'm accustomed to using it. You know, they broke me up when I come in the program from saying me. They told me, turn that W upside down. You know, and it's me. And I was accustomed to always saying, poor me, you know, one of those kind of things. But to use this first muscle, the muscle of honesty, you know, when one has conned and manipulated and lied for so long, you know, you actually begin to believe these kind of things. And this is a hard muscle to exercise. See, this is a muscle, I'm sure, when this child first began to use these muscles, the tears had to come to his eyes. Because to use something that you've never used before, there's pain there. You know, when I found out that I was telling the truth, it scared me, you know? You know? When I first said out loud, I am an alcoholic, I said, oh, my Lord, have mercy, you know? It scared me. I was telling the truth. And the truth will bring tears to your eyes awfully quick sometimes, you know? Because when you speak those words, you speak it from the heart. So I'm sure he had to say to himself, do I honestly want to get well? Am I going to get well for somebody else? See? Do I just want to show people that, well, you know, I could do this if I want to. But do I really and truly, within the pit of my gut, do I want to do it for myself? And that muscle, that first muscle of honesty, must be exercised for me. Do I honestly want to get well? You know, after you have conned and lied and manipulated for so long, you begin to believe all of these, at least I did, all of these fantastic things, because how many times that I told somebody, you know, well, you know, I'm going to quit such and such a time, and or I'm not going to drink until such and such a time, and then somebody else would come along with one of them stupid questions and say, well, not a question, rather. Well, it started, well, do you love me? Yes, sure. Well, if you love me, you'll stop drinking. Oh, Lord have mercy, you know. I got to drink so I can show you how much I love you, you know, one of those kind of things. You're not going to, you're not going to believe that. So it had to be a soul-searching thing. Holly, do you honestly want to do this for you? Sure, you got two children. You know? But come hell, high water, or government restriction, do you want to do this for you? Yeah. And I found out that I did. And I found out that I could. And like this youngster, that muscle of honesty brought tears to my eyes. Because, you know, sometimes, as I say, when you've lied, you don't know whether you're telling the truth or not. And how many, you know, a long time ago, Franklin, he knows this. You know how when it used to read, if you have a sincere desire, they don't say sincere desire anymore. If you have a desire for sobriety, you know, it used to read, if you have a sincere desire for sobriety, it doesn't say anymore, it says desire. Because, hell, when you have drunk, you don't know whether you're sincere or not, you know, about a thing, you know. And they don't want to make you lie, so they just say desire now. Used to read sincere desire. And then this youngster found out that he had to use the muscle of open-mindedness. And I found out I had to use the muscle of open-mindedness, you know. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know, many people don't want you to talk about the spiritual part of the program. Oh, now, don't talk about the spiritual part of the program. You know, one of those kind of things. I was at a lovely meeting one time, and someone said, asked this young man to sing. He could sing beautifully. We're having some kind of anniversary affair there. And he sang a song, You Saw Me Crying in the Chapel. And someone, you know, I can't ever keep my mouth shut. I always say the wrong thing at the wrong time. And someone made the remark, what is that? What do you mean? You saw me crying in the chapel. A grown man singing a song, you saw me crying. I said, well, baby, he was... It's better to be caught singing a song like You Saw Me Crying in the Chapel than it is pissing in the alley. I said, now you make up your mind, you know. Nobody ever got put in jail for crying in the chapel. But you sure can get picked up for indecent exposure. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. See. Mm. See. But you know, my friends, to accept help outside of oneself, you know, that's open-mindedness. You see, when you're laying there and you don't know what end to put on the commode first, oh, you will accept anything, you know. But the minute that you can sit there for a while, you know, and have a choice which end to put over there first, you don't need any help. See, you'll listen to anything anybody's got to say, but when, you know, when it's the other way around. But many times, why is it that I cannot be open-minded? Why is it that sometimes we have a problem with being open-minded, of accepting help outside of ourselves from a power greater than ourselves? Because, you know, sometimes we've played God for so long that we've got it all mixed up, you know. I can do it myself, you know. Then sometimes we might get frightened of the word restored to sanity. You see, I stayed on that second step for 3 years because I'll tell you why. It wasn't that I couldn't come to believe in a power greater than myself, because I had been taught to believe in God. But you see, what I had been taught to believe and what I've come to believe in were not synonymous with one another at all. You'd better believe it, because I was taught about a God of fear and wrath and all that sort of thing. And, you know, and they used to tell me, well, now, you know, you're going to die and go to hell. Well, I figured, well, if I'm going to die and go to hell, if I don't stop drinking, well, if I'm wet, it'll take longer to burn or something like that. So, you know, might as well. So I just really give up. And then some of the praying that I did, it was absolutely ludicrous. You know, it was one of those kind of things. But you know, one time, our divine Lord said to a man that had lain by a pool. Now, don't go home and say I said this man was alcoholic, but he acted just like us. He was laying by a pool, and a book of books said he'd been laying there for 38 years. You see, anybody wanting a pool in 38 years, he could roll off in there in that length of time. But he came by and laying by the pool, and he was a very sick man, you know, and our divine Lord said to him, wilt thou be healed? And, you know, instead of him saying yes or no, he said, well, you know, you see, an angel's supposed to come down every so often and trouble the waters, and whoever got in there first got healed, you know. And, you know, that reminded me so much of people like me, you know, when someone says, you want to get well? You start giving excuses. Our divine Lord said to this man, wilt thou be healed? He said, well, you know, every time I try to get in the pool, he hasn't said yes, no, every time I try to get in the pool, somebody beats me in it. It's like somebody say, you want to go to a meeting? Well, you know, I got to do this, but every time I get ready to go, the baby cries or something, or the big troller breaks or something, excuses. So our divine Lord said to him to take up your bed and walk. But, you know, many times, sometimes we do not want to be restored to sanity, because once one is restored to sanity, it in Well, you know, it means it entails responsibility. Being restored to sanity has, shall we say, certain prerequisites there that one must be responsible. And you see, as long as I act like a fool, I'm not going to be expected to be a responsible person. See? So that's the reason why many of us, you know, they say, oh, I don't need to ask him so-and-so nothing. You know, he's drunk. He ain't going to do it right, or she won't do it right. Now, he's crazy. Oh, hell, do you know one thing? Some drunks just love that. You know? They say, I'm crazy, so I don't have to do nothing. If I admit to that second step being restored to sanity, they're going to pour it on me. Now, I don't want to hear that. You know? So you see, my friends, sometimes we'd rather stay on the road that we are on than to take up our bed and walk. Because when one takes up his bed and walks, that includes the springs and mattress, some responsibility, some heaviness going on there with it, and we don't want that. See? So I had to use this muscle of open-minded, sure, of open-mindedness. Sure, I believed in God, but I'll tell you one thing. I didn't trust him. Mm-mm. Do you know why? When people will tell you to trust God, I didn't. Because you know why? I did not think that he could understand, you know, what was happening to me. Isn't that dumb? You know. Many times you say, yes, I believe in God, but we don't trust him, do we? If you trust him, you wouldn't always be saying, well, I do it myself. Yeah. No, if you trusted God, you wouldn't be saying that. You know, and when I asked myself, why is it you didn't trust God? Well, why didn't you trust him? Were you ashamed to tell him about your drinking? Because, you know, I used to get down on my knees and pray to the saints and tell them, don't tell God. You know? I'm not lying. Now, you're talking about being the baddie? I'm telling you. Oh, yes, I was way out. Far out. But being responsible. When one is restored to sanity or being restored, he is also being restored to his responsibilities. And that can be a pretty frightening thing at times. See? To me, take the spiritual away from the program and we have no program whatsoever. None. So this open-mindedness, this youngster was willing to accept help outside of himself. See? Because hope was born. And hence it was with me, I who had always believed in God. But to ask him to help me with my drinking, oh no, you don't go to God with things like that. You know, the kind of family I won't say raised, I didn't get raised, I just grew up there, you know, a topsy deal, you know, I was just there. You just didn't do those kind of things in my family. They told me that you cleaned up your act and then you prayed. Well, I figured it like this. Well, as far as that's concerned, and then I couldn't understand when some of the things they talked about. And I was always had one of those analytical minds, you know, when I went to church, you know, they'd always talk about, now you got to trust God, you got to do this, you know. And don't ask for nothing for yourself. Don't ever do that, you know. Don't ever do that in your heart. So they start out. Now, this would be confusing to me. Now, everything must be the will of God. Okay, that's fine. And you didn't contradict when I was coming along, unless you got your brains knocked out. It said, everything must be the will of God. Okay, I go along. And then it said, well, all right, now before we go home, we're going to pray that it don't rain. I said, well, you said it was the will of God, and now you're going to say, ask God to change his mind about the rain. You know, something like that. I couldn't have, shut up! So that's what you got, you know? So then this child also had to use the muscle of willingness. He had to become willing. Along with his honesty, his open-mindedness, he had to be willing. You know, he couldn't just simply sit there in that wheelchair. See, he was willing to go to any lengths. He went to the lengths of asking for these heavy braces.